Hey guys, how's it going? I got stung in the leg by a wasp. A big red wasp. Well, he got his. It was really unfair too because I had called truce with the thing. I said, you know what, wasp? I'm going to let you live. You can fly around here. You just leave me alone. And he stung me on the leg. I think that's the first time I've ever been stung by a red wasp. I've had yellow jackets. Certainly yellow jackets. Maybe even a bee. I think I got stung by a bee first when I was real young, 3 or 4. I think that was my first red wasp, though. I can't recommend it, although it only hurt for about 2 minutes, and then it went away. I mean, it's a little bit sore now. But other than that, I'm just great. How are you? All right, well, anyway, it's my show, the Scott Horton Show. Libertarian foreign policy, mostly. I hate the government. I just hate it. I hate all of the things that it does. Even the things that contradict the other things, as Ned Flanders might say. And, yeah, the war's the worst. Hate the wars. God, they're so horrible and stupid and evil. So that's what the show's about. It's about why you ought to hate the wars as much as me. Not as much as you hate me, but as much as I hate the wars. I mean, at least hate the wars as much as you hate me, but hopefully more than that. Yeah, alright, anyway. So yeah, it's my show. I spent most of the morning putting out fires, or trying to. I guess I can't really claim credit for succeeding, but I can claim credit for wasting my morning and not really getting much of a show together. Although, Gage hooked me up. He's got Matthew Akins on the show. Remember I told you yesterday Matthew Akins was writing for Rolling Stone? I know that raises suspicions, but anyway, here he is writing from Yemen. I couldn't get my flash player to let this thing play, so I don't care. I read the thing anyway. Akins, he's good, man. He's done good work from Afghanistan. We've talked with him in the past. Shared a couple bylines with Anand Gopal back during the election last year. Remember that? It was 2 years ago, wasn't it? Yeah, no, it was last year. Anyway, so Akins will be here. And then Gareth is supposedly back from Vienna, but maybe he's all jet-lagged and hanging over. I can't get a hold of him. And then tomorrow, Phil Weiss. And, yeah, other than that, I'm just going to cover the news, I guess. I've got some news. Also, I'll tell you about my fun drive. Yeah, I guess it's probably annoying it's going on this long. But on the other hand, I try not to talk about it for extended periods of time in a row, really. You know, like if you ever listen to NPR News so that you know your enemy. Like I do, half of what you hear is them asking for money. But I try not to do that too much, man. But it is summer fun drive time. The cool thing is I don't give away tote bags. I got books, good books. And I got QR code commodity discs. And I got a chance to win a trip to Costa Rica. Yeah, check it out. Y'all want to win a free vacation in the jungles of Costa Rica this summer and help support the Scott Horton Show? You can. Joshua Hughes, peace activist and permaculturalist, runs Verde Energia Pacifica, an intentional community in the mountains of Llanos de Periscal, Costa Rica, and he's offered to raffle off a week's stay to listeners of this show. Airfare is on you, but transportation to and from the airport, as well as a 7-day stay for you and a guest in your own private house with 3 meals a day is covered. You can learn and practice some skills, or just go for a swim in their river, pool, or waterfall, walk jungle trails, enjoy the views, do yoga or dance in the studio, make art, play music, check out a local soccer game, or simply relax in a hammock by the river and read. Raffle tickets are just $50. Stop by scotthorton.org/raffle for details. And anyone who enters will get half off on any future stay down there. scotthorton.org/raffle. All right. So that ought to help make it worthwhile to help support the show. Oh, I forgot to turn off the air conditioner, didn't I? See, how loud is that? Oh, yeah, -657. That's way too loud. Sorry about that. I'll fix it at the break here in just a minute. Goddamn thing. No, you know what I'll do? I'll play another one of those goddamn things, and then I'm going to turn the air conditioner off. Okay, guys, it's summer fun drive time at the Scott Horton Show. Bills are piling up and equipment is wearing out. So here's the deal. Anyone who donates $50 or more gets a chance to win a week's vacation for two to Costa Rica. Drawing is July 15th. Winner, go whenever you want. See more details at scotthorton.org/raffle. Anyone who donates $100 or more gets entered into the raffle, plus a 1-ounce silver QR code commodity disc from commoditydiscs.com. And the first 25 people to donate $100 or more will also get a copy of Your Money or Your Life, Why We Must Abolish the Income Tax by Sheldon Richman, or the audiobook of Lou Rockwell's Fascism versus Capitalism, narrated by me, for free. Stop by scotthorton.org/donate or scotthorton.org/raffle for details. You can also sign up for monthly donations by way of PayPal, per interview at Patreon, support with Bitcoin, and shop through scotthorton.org/Amazon. And thanks. All right, hell yeah. And I got a couple updates to that. First of all, Derek Sheriff is giving away a lifetime subscription. In fact, better than a lifetime subscription, if you could believe that. Membership at Listen and Think Audio. He's doing audiobooks of all libertarian titles. He's an ideological individualist, just like you and me. And check out what he says to me yesterday. He says, did I mention $250 donated this show and you get a lifetime membership to Listen Think Audio? He says, I just wanted to clarify that this membership benefit is fully transferable also. So although each code can only be used once, someone can give it as a gift right after they donate the $250. Or use it weeks, months, or even years later. They can do whatever they want with the codes they get and could even leave their membership benefit to someone in their will. Hope we give away the other two soon. We had one person take us up on this great offer already. So that's Listen and Think Audio if you're into audiobooks. There are some people who, hey, that's their thing, man, audiobooks. So here you go. If you're into libertarianism and audiobooks, I already got a good couple of dozen there going. And maybe three or four dozen going, and then many more in the fire too, and they're going to be around for a while, cranking these things out, and you'll just get free libertarian audiobooks for life for a donation of $250 to the Scott Horton Show. And he's only given away three, and we already gave away one, so there's two more opportunities for that, if you want that. And then also, Charles Goyette is sending a box of books too, so when I say donate $100, you get a commodity disc in your choice of Sheldon Richman's book or Lou Rockwell's audiobook. You could also go ahead and throw in Red, Blue, and Broke All Over by Charles Goyette as one of your choices there, too. Great book. Great guy. Brilliant guy. Great economist. Great talk radio host. And great author, too. Really talented writer. Charles Goyette, man. He's really something else. Red, Blue, and Broke All Over, too. So, that's pretty good. All right. Now, lucky for you, the music's going to start playing, and we're going to take a break. And when we get back, instead of talking about this stuff anymore, we'll be talking about the bad news. But while I still have a few seconds, stop by scotthorton.org. Sign up for the podcast feeds. There's the whole show archive. There's the interview-only archive. There's the chat room. Join up with the boys in the chat room. Hey, guys. How's it going this morning? Good to see you. ScottHorton.org/chat. It's also an IRC free node chat room, hashtag Scott Horton Show. And you can follow me on Twitter at Scott Horton Show too. Chat room in my left eye, Twitter in my right. See you in a minute. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. This nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone. We are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy. Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback. Just click the book in the right margin at scotthorton.org or thewarstate.com. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson knows his stuff. He made a killing running his own hedge fund and always gets out of the stock market before the government-generated bubbles pop. which is, by the way, what he's doing right now, selling all his stocks and betting on gold and commodities. Sign up at WallStreetWindow.com and get real-time updates from Mike on all his market moves. It's hard to know how to protect your savings and earn a good return in an economy like this. Mike Swanson can help. Follow along on paper and see for yourself. WallStreetWindow.com.
Hey, man, how's it going? I really should have been a music DJ, man. Except I can't stand doing the fake voice all day, you know? And I hate Aerosmith. Apparently, to be on the FM radio, you have to play Aerosmith. Well, I will not. I actually saw them live when I was a kid, and they were great because I was a kid. I was really there to see Skid Row, but I got to admit that Aerosmith was better. But that was stolen because I was a stupid little kid. All right, it's the Scott Horton Show. Sorry about that. I didn't mean to inflict that upon you there. It is what it is. Sorry, electoral politics time on the show. Now for the part of the show I call, gotta talk about electoral politics now. I like Adam Johnson. He's such a horrible commie, and he just hates libertarianism, and he's just wrong about everything. But I love him anyway because he's the kind of lefty who hates Democrats. And that's good enough for me, mostly. It means better on war and worse on economics, basically, right? But he's a principled guy. He's over there with Peter Hart, who I love at Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting. And he put out this great tweet. It's been decades, but we finally reached peak Bush. Now, I'm not so sure about that. And I told you before, I think Jeb's going to be the president, and who knows what kind of fires he's going to set. It's going to be horrible. But I do have to admit that this is a great tweet. The picture on the left is the headline, George Bush, George W. Bush, that is, charged a wounded vet nonprofit $100,000 to speak at a charity event. And then the right picture from the same day, yesterday's headline, Jeb Bush, people should work longer hours to grow the U.S. economy, right? Not to do better for themselves and their family, but to serve the state. Hey, we got a war to win, man. You guys work harder. We got some welfare payments to Israel we got to make, to Egypt. These Bushes, I don't know, man. It's funny, I remember back in like 2005, my buddy Chad, we'd be watching George W. Bush on TV, and I'd be so angry, I just want to throw the TV out the window, and my buddy Chad would just be laughing at him, and he couldn't understand why I couldn't just find it funny. And I could understand how he could find it funny, but I just couldn't. I'd just be so goddamn angry. But, yeah, these guys, man, isn't that something? Jeb and George. Yeah, you need to work longer hours. While Junior is charging wounded veterans $100,000 to hear him talk about, a noble cause. Don't try to make me explain what I mean by noble cause. Just noble, okay? It's noble, all right? Turn around and eat your big ass biscuit. Leave me alone. All right. More electoral politics news now. Lindsey Graham gave a speech about the war. He joked that something about you can't take reporters, don't write down everything I say. It would be in violation of the Geneva Conventions, which I guess have rules against mongering war. You know, not just actually, you know, voting for an aggressive war, participating in an aggressive war, but talking about why to start one, which that's going way too far. America's Bill of Rights is the law of the land here. But anyway, well, direct incitement to violence, but it's got to be direct and immediate. Come on now. Don't fudge the line. But anyway, so he's joking because he knows that, yeah, he's a war criminal. He's absolutely horrible. But so check it out. Here's what he says. From Newsweek.com. Which, take that into account, maybe they're making this up, I don't know. He said we need 30,000 American troops across the Muslim world to help counter, get this, radical Islam. That would include 10,000 troops in Iraq, another 10,000 in Syria, as part of a large regional army, he says, is needed to kick out the terrorist group ISIS and embattled Syrian dictator Bashar Assad, and maintaining 9,500 troops in Afghanistan, rather than bringing them home as he worries President Obama plans to do. If I thought we needed more in Afghanistan, I would send them. So, I mean, this, my point is not to mock Lindsey Graham. It's not like he's going to be the president or whatever, but the point is that this is the point of view of the war party, and it needs to be dissected a little bit. It doesn't take too much effort. What does it mean that we have to keep at least 10,000 troops in Afghanistan? It means that he, one, agrees with Barack Obama about that. Barack Obama, who signed a deal to keep America there till at least 2024. Remember that? Obama, who promised the last of the troops would be out at the end of last year, but there's 10,000 there right now. And secondly, what does it mean? But that they can't leave, or else the Taliban will outright rule Kabul. And it'll be a disgrace and a humiliation for American imperial prestige. And they can't have that, so they gotta just stay forever, so that the consequences of their policies can never come due. What it means is the surge in Afghanistan didn't work. The counterinsurgency doctrine didn't work. They failed to give them a government in a box. They failed to change their entire society. They failed to bring the Taliban to heel. They failed. And then secondly, 10,000 troops in Iraq are supposed to accomplish what? We had 150,000 troops there, and they fought the Sunni insurgency to a standstill and a truce, basically. They did not defeat them. And now, you know, so-called Al-Qaeda in Iraq, now the Islamic State, it completely rules Mosul, Fallujah, Ramadi. They don't have a presence there. They completely rule Western and Northwestern Iraq, Anbar, and all the way up to Mosul. And so 10,000 troops are going to go in there and make a difference? That is what Paul Wolfowitz and the neocon kooks were saying. Remember when they said that General Shinseki was wildly off the mark when he said it would take hundreds of thousands of troops to occupy the country and maintain dominance as we create the new order there? Wildly off the mark. The neocons, ever since 1996... we're pushing fantasies of having invasions of 5,000, 10,000 guys. Yeah, we'll create a little safe zone, and then this and that will happen. And the Pentagon is constantly shooting these guys down. That's why they're called the crazies. They have no idea what they're talking about. Now that's Lindsey Graham's solution, 10,000 troops in Iraq. That's just enough to get 10,000 troops killed and accomplish absolutely nothing. And then another 10,000 in Syria is going to fight. Notice he doesn't even mention Al-Qaeda there, Al-Nusra. But they're going to fight ISIS and Assad and Hezbollah all at the same time? 10,000 in Syria? Madness. Stupidity. You hate government? One of them libertarian types? Or maybe you just can't stand the president, gun grabbers, or warmongers? Me too. That's why I invented LibertyStickers.com. Well, Rick owns it now, and I didn't make up all of them, but still. If you're driving around and want to tell everyone else how wrong their politics are, there's only one place to go. LibertyStickers.com has got your bumper covered. Left, right, libertarian, empire, police state, founders quote, central banking. Yes, bumper stickers about central banking. Lots of them. And, well, everything that matters. LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here. Are you a libertarian and or peacenik? Live in North America? If you want, you can hire me to come and give a speech to your group. I'm good on the terror, war, and intervention, civil liberty stuff, blaming Woodrow Wilson for everything bad in the world, Iran, central banking, political realignment, and, well, you know, everything. I can teach markets to liberals and peace to the right. Just watch me. Check out scotthorton.org/speeches for some examples, and email me, scott@scotthorton.org, for more information. See you there. Okay, guys. First of all, thanks again to everybody who has contributed to the fund drive here this summer. I appreciate it. And secondly, thanks for all the kind things that you say when you write me about stuff, too. I'm glad you people value the show. I like being a radio show. All right. Yeah, so Gareth is not back from Vienna. So it doesn't look like I'm going to be able to interview him. Anyway, the goddamn commercial break interrupted me. I'm glad I don't have a guest right now. That way I get to keep going. It's not that I'm saying that Lindsey Graham ought to be proposing greater troop levels. I'm saying that look at what nonsense this is. Does he even believe that? Are there people that are advising him that, yeah, this is the policy that we should be pushing? 10,000 troops in Iraq and 10,000 troops in Syria. And to what end? And in Syria, they're supposed to be fighting against the Islamic State and their enemies at the same time? Huh? And the reason why that's his ridiculous answer is because, well, 10,000 here and 10,000 there, maybe the focus group decided that doesn't sound too bad. Fred Kagan said, I think we can maybe get away with that. But if he was to propose a real war and a real invasion and what it would actually take for the Army and the Marines to undo the creation of the Islamic State, redraw that Sykes-Picot border, the American people just wouldn't have it. And then, plus, also, Israel first, right? And Israel prefers these bad guys to those bad guys. And so, you know, why would Lindsey Graham, who is as Israel first as any senator that there is, why would he really work too hard to destroy ISIS when ISIS is working to limit and check the power of Hezbollah and Syria? Although, actually, isn't that backfiring? Isn't a new generation of Hezbollah recruits being battle-hardened right now in Syria? Well, Israeli policy is always counterproductive for their own stated and true goals, even. Seems like to me, but anyway, here's their former ambassador, Michael Oren, again, explain. Because I know it sounds crazy, man, but anyway, here he is a year ago, after the fall of Mosul, after Omar Baku al-Baghdadi declared himself the new Caliph Ibrahim, ruler of all Sunni Muslims in the world, and especially between Baghdad and Damascus. Michael Oren said,
if we have to choose the lesser of evils here, the lesser evil is the Sunnis over the Shiites. It's an evil, believe me, it's a terrible evil. Again, they've just taken out 1,700 former Iraqi soldiers and shot them in a field. But who are they fighting against? They're fighting against the proxy with Iran that's complicit in the murder of 160,000 people in Syria. You can just, you know, do the math. And again, one side is armed with suicide bombers and rockets. The other side has access to military nuclear capabilities. So from Israel's perspective, you know, if someone's got, if there's got to be an evil that's going to prevail, you know, let the Sunni evil prevail.
Uh-huh. All right, now, so you parse all the bluster about Iran's pretended nuclear program there and Assad's responsibility for every casualty in all sides of the war, even though it's been America and it's NATO and GCC allies that have been supporting the jihadists against him this whole time. What he's really saying is, you see what he's saying? One of them is a state. The other, they're just jihadis with rifles and rockets and suicide bombers. So from Israel's perspective, losers. Extremely weak actors who, you know, are assumed to not even be able to drive a tank. What the hell are they ever going to amount to? So, because, you know, what's funny is just because I've been doing this for so long, we've been talking about this regime change in Syria for 10 years before the regime change in Syria ever started, right? And if you go back and find episodes of the show from 2006, I'm talking with Eric Margolies about, you know, the clean break and the neocon and Israeli policy that they want to get rid of Assad. And I would always ask, but why would they want to do that? He's a stable, secular, peaceful dictator up there, keeping all the radicals in check, and hasn't done the slightest thing, really, to provoke Israel or do anything to Israel. I mean, yeah, he backs Hezbollah, but so what? They're not an offensive threat to Israel. Oh, they can keep Israel out of Lebanon. And Israel wants to conquer southern Lebanon. They want that river, the Latika River. But, you know, I don't know. Seems like going pretty far. And then I would always say back then, we're talking even before the redirection article in 2007, right? Or 2008, whenever that was, that who do they think that they're going to get to replace Assad? The Muslim Brotherhood, if they're lucky, right? If they're lucky. And Eric Margolies would say, and this, again, is years before 2011 and the Arab Spring and the American and Saudi hijacking of it in Syria the way they did. I would ask, how in the world could the Israelis think that they would prefer probably a jihadist state on their northern border to the secular, fascist, stable dictatorship that they have now? And Margolies said, well, because suicide bombers are basically weak. They're pathetic militiamen. Up against a real army, they're nothing. And so, you know, the Syrian army is actual potential. But in Israeli eyes, these jihadists are just, you know, some kook standing out in the middle of a field waving an AK-47 in the air above his head and getting blown up to death. No threat at all. So, yeah, go ahead. The Muslim Brotherhood, if they're lucky. Hey, if they're unlucky and they get Al-Qaeda or worse, eh, whatever, man. Still better than having an actual professional army. And I'm not so sure that's true. Look at what's going on in Iraq right now. The Islamic State seems to be doing pretty good with irregular tactics. And being, you know, and they can't do their big convoys anymore for the most part because the Americans are in the air bombing the hell out of them every day. And they're still doing pretty good except against the Syrian Kurds. Everywhere else, they're doing pretty good. And, of course, I don't know if we talked about this on the show, but the Baiji refinery there that they were fighting over for such a long time, it's kaput now. Remember, Prothero was on, it may have been as far back as last summer or last fall, when he was saying, well, you know, this refinery, they're fighting over it, but everybody's trying to be really careful to not break the refinery because everybody needs it. And to fix it, you know, it can be run. But to fix it, if it's broken, takes the Japanese engineers who made it in the first place to come back out and do it. And they're not going to do it in a security situation like this. And I read a thing the other day where analysts were looking at pictures of the Baiji refinery, and they're saying this thing is toast. It's done. It's a pile of scrap metal now is what it is. It's not a refinery of a damn thing. Didn't take much to take it offline permanently. So, anyway, they'll still fight like hell over that town adjacent to it anyway, I guess. But anyway, that's the plan. That's Lindsey Graham's plan. 10,000 troops in Iraq, 10,000 in Syria, fighting on either side of the ISIS war. And keep them in Afghanistan, escalate in Afghanistan. Hell, nobody remembers that Obama did a surge there. Because all the Democrats wanted to pretend they never heard of such a thing. And all the Republicans didn't want to give Obama credit for doing what they would have had him do, escalate the war. So Americans don't even know we had an escalation there. So hell, let's just escalate again. We'll do a surge. We'll bring Michelle Flournoy and John Nagel and whatever the rest of the losers from the Center for a New American Security. David Petraeus and Stanley McChrystal, the torturer, murderer, liar. And have them go fail in Afghanistan all over again. You could go and sign your boy up right now. Honor and valor and God and country and can't lose if we stay. Hey, Al Scott here. If you've got a band, a business, a cause, or campaign, and you need stickers to help promote, check out thebumpersticker.com at thebumpersticker.com. They digitally print with solvent ink. So you get the photo quality results of digital with the strength and durability of old-style screen printing. I'm sure glad I sold thebumpersticker.com to Rick back when. He's made a hell of a great company out of it, and there are thousands of satisfied customers who agree with me, too. Let thebumpersticker.com help you get the word out. That's thebumpersticker.com at thebumpersticker.com.
Hey, I'll check out the audiobook of Lou Rockwell's Fascism Versus Capitalism, narrated by me, Scott Horton, at audible.com. It's a great collection of his essays and speeches on the important tradition of liberty. From medieval history to the Ron Paul Revolution, Rockwell blasts our status enemies, profiles our greatest libertarian heroes, and prescribes the path forward in the battle against Leviathan. Fascism Versus Capitalism by Lou Rockwell for audiobook. Find it at Audible, Amazon, iTunes, or just click in the right margin of my website at scotthorton.org. Alright, y'all. It's my show, Scott Horton Show. Continuing with the part of the show we call the electoral politics part of the show, Mike Huckabee is running for president again. I know. I'm sorry. Get this. From BuzzFeed.com. Mike Huckabee. There's really no such thing as a Palestinian. You notice my electoral politics stuff isn't really about electoral politics. It's about the subject matter, the horrible things that the electoral people say and think and believe and mean to do with you and me. There's really no such thing as a Palestinian. I love the sub-headline here, too. The subline. You have Arabs and Persians. And there's such complexity in that. But there's really no such thing. That's been a political tool to try and force land away from Israel. Wow, what? Yeah, Arabs and Persians. So, they come in all different nation states. Well, the Persians pretty much all live in Iran. But there's all different nations. Is he saying there's no such thing as a Saudi? I guess we have to admit there's no such thing as an Iraqi anymore. How about Egyptians? Is there such a thing as Egyptians? Or they're just Arabs? So there's no such thing as nationalism, only ethnicity when it comes to the Arabs, according to Mike Huckabee, because he's decided to define all of our terms for us. Okay. There's such complexity in that, which he just completely papered over and ignored. But there's really no such thing, again referring back to his statement, the Palestinians. So now that he's denied that it's possible for there to be a nationality among Arab people, then therefore there's really no such thing. That's his loophole, right? He's not saying that there are no humans in Gaza, the West Bank, in the East Jerusalem there. He's not saying that. He's just saying he's already announced that an Arab can't have a nationality. And so if there are Arabs there in Palestine, well, they're just Arabs. They're not Palestinians. And since they're not Palestinians, they don't have a right to that land. That's what he means. They're trying to force land away from Israel. He means they're trying to keep it. They're trying to live on their private property. Israel is trying to steal it from them, and they won't give it up. These are the kinds of gymnastics you got to do in your brain to be a conservative in America today. Basically, there really is no such thing. I need to be careful about saying this because people get upset. You know what? I think we can leave emotions out of it for a minute and just stick to the facts. There's really no such thing as a Palestinian, Huckabee said. There's not. And then he argued that a two-state solution is irrational and unworkable. There's plenty of land in the world outside of Israel for a Palestinian state. Again, you see, they get to define all of our terms for us. So now Israel already is defined as including all of the West Bank and the Gaza Strip and all of Jerusalem, see? So now it's a question of these Arabs trying to take part of Israel away from Israel when that's just a lie. That's just PR. Little bit of semantics to screw you in your ear hole. Huh? Wait, what?
There's plenty of land in the world outside of Israel for the Palestinians to have a state. What are they doing there? How did they get there? Who are they the children of? I'm telling you, I know. They're not a bunch of Iraqi refugees from George W. Bush's Iraq War II. They all went to Syria and or died. Some in Jordan. That's not who lives on the West Bank. The people who live on the West Bank are the people who are from there and the refugees from the rest of what we now call Israel, who were kicked out for not being Jewish in 1948. Huckabee added, I love this. My point is, if that's the issue, if it's real estate, if you look at a map and say, here is how much Israel has, and here is how much the Arab states hold, there is plenty of land. Let them take it out of Egypt. Let them take it out of Syria. Let them take it out of Jordan. In other words, transfer the millions of Palestinians who live in the Gaza Strip and the West Bank and East Jerusalem, kick them all out in a Trail of Tears forced march to Egypt or Syria or Jordan where they're not from. And why? Because, again, he gets to define these terms. Where now it's not a question of Palestinian human beings owning property and having an unalienable right to it. No, now it's a question of, look at the total amount of square miles under the rule of the Saudi king. Why, they ought to be happy with that. Right? Just like how you are so pleased that there are giant property owners in states in America that you've never been to before in your life. Some guy has some land. Look at how big Nevada is. Oh, no, the feds rule that. That doesn't count. Anyway, what a joke. So, as long as there's no such thing as history, as long as the Arab ethnicity is forbidden from having nationality, as long as you can build in gigantic lies into your false premise, then you can pretend that it makes perfect sense that these Palestinians who are trying to steal and take land away from Israel ought to have to go and live in Egypt instead. Why doesn't he just say, drown them in the Mediterranean Sea, or kill them all with, you know, rifle shots to the back of the head? They don't have a right to live. They don't have a right to own property. They don't have the right to be in the way of the Israeli nationalist, expansionist settler state. They don't have rights. They're not human at all. Even the Christians. Mike Huckabee would have you believe all the Palestinians are Muslims. Because if he has to tell you that the Palestinian Christians live there too, then you might wonder whether, gee, maybe a Palestinian, an Arab, did you say? Oh, he can't be a Palestinian. But I mean an Arab occupying the West Bank of the Jordan River somehow. Did you say he's saved? Minister Huckabee, I have a question. Does that mean that maybe his life is worth, I don't know, like 3/5 of a human being or something like that? Is it possible that he has, like, the penumbra of the shadow of a property right? What color are their eyes, pray tell? Did any of them have blue eyes? Maybe then they have property rights. These Palestinian occupiers of Israeli territory on the West Bank. This is, I'm not surprised, but I kind of am shocked. I'm kind of pleased because usually Zionists are too smart to talk like Mike Huckabee. Usually, they don't come right out and contradict themselves and make such a poor case for why the Palestinians ought to all be rounded up and forced off of their land, the ones who are left. and forced to go and live in refugee camps like their brethren who already live, of course, in refugee camps in Syria and in Jordan. Yeah, Mike Huckabee, he's a real man of Christ, you can tell. Because that's what Jesus would do. He'd hold a forced march. Anyway. Now that they have quit pretending to try to negotiate for a separate Palestinian state, you're going to see this argument get clearer and clearer, and the apartheid side is going to lose. Because that's life in the 21st century. It's taking a while, I admit. Hey, I'll Scott Horton here. It's always safe to say that one should keep at least some of your savings in precious metals as a hedge against inflation. And if this economy ever does heat back up and the banks start expanding credit, rising prices could make metals a very profitable bet. Since 1977, Robertson Roberts Brokerage Inc. has been helping people buy and sell gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, and they do it well. They're fast, reliable, and trusted for more than 35 years. And they take Bitcoin. Call Robertson Roberts at 1-800-874-9760 or stop by rrbi.co. Hey, y'all, guess what? You can now order transcripts of any interview I've done for the incredibly reasonable price of $2.50 each. Listen, finding a good transcriptionist is near impossible, but I've got one now. Just go to scotthorton.org/transcripts, enter the name and date of the interview you want written up, click the PayPal button, and I'll have it in your email in 72 hours max. You don't need a PayPal account to do this. Man, I'm really going to have to learn how to talk more good. That's scotthorton.org/transcripts. All right, y'all. Welcome back to the goddamn thing here, dude. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, Scott Horton Show. Does anybody use that site LinkedIn for anything? About once every few months, I go in there and hit accept on all the people who want to be my buddy. But then that's all I've ever done with that site this whole time. Does anybody use it for anything other than accepting requests from people you don't know? Anyway, whatever. They're making money somehow. For some reason, we keep hitting accept. I mean, what do you want to be rude, I guess? All right, anyway, yeah, so it's my show, the Scott Horton Show. You remember back in 2002 when everyone was preaching the gospel of, Romans 13, whatever the government says is right, is great. It doesn't say that, actually. It says, rend under Caesar what is Caesar's. And the way I understand that, it means, who cares about a coin? That's not what you're doing here. You're here trying to earn a trip to the afterlife, dude. So, it's got his face on it, doesn't it? Must be his. Go ahead and let him tax it. Let him have it and don't give a damn because you got other priorities. It wasn't an endorsement of the authority and righteousness of the emperor. It was saying, doesn't matter about the emperor. You're on a different mission as an individual human being attempting to achieve the grace of God. Huh? Do I understand your religion for you good enough? Huh? No? No. When Republicans are in power, what it says is, you shut up, boy. It says in the Bible that when a Republican is in power, you shut up. That's what Romans 13 says. Remember that? 2002? Wait, I know better than the horrible, stupid, evil liars in charge. Hear me out. You're a traitor. You're pro-terrorist. You love terrorism. You hate freedom and America. Here, I thought you were my next-door neighbor, but now you claim to know better than George Bush? Yeah, right. Haven't you ever read the Bible where it says, shut up? Render unto Caesar. I don't know what render means, but you shut up. Well, right around then, Colleen Rowley, who could have stopped the 9/11 attack if the FBI had let her do it. She was the lawyer for the Minneapolis field office of the FBI, and they had arrested Zacharias Moussaoui. And if they had been allowed to get a FISA warrant, which they could have walked right up to the court and said, can we have a warrant, please? Thank you, and left. If only their supervisors had allowed them to do it, to go to the court in the first place, they would have been able to, through his laptop computer and paperwork, they would have been able to find all the phone numbers of Muhammad Atta and his buddies down in Florida, and the 9/11 attack would have been stopped, like 99% chance. And she blew the whistle in 2002 and said, hey, there's cover-up going on here, this, that, the other thing. And then she also wrote this letter to Robert Mueller. And this was published in full February the 26th of 2003, in fact. I said 2002. I think she wrote it in 2002. But anyway, the first thing she says, one of the first things that she says in this letter is, you know, hey, we're trying to protect the country from the terrorists, etc. She says, that posture has been weakened by the diversion of attention from Al-Qaeda to our government's plan to invade Iraq, a step that will, in all likelihood, bring an exponential increase in the terrorist threat to the U.S., both at home and abroad. And, you know, you might have wondered to yourself, well, when the Bible says render unto Caesar, does that include listening to Colleen Rowley? Because after all, she's an FBI lawyer. She works for Caesar. And she says, hey, don't do it, man. There is a terrorism problem. And by going and doing your extracurricular work here in Iraq, you're going to, quote unquote, prove them right about us. You're going to make them look right about us. And you're going to turn a country into chaos. And you are going to make the terrorism problem worse. And at this time, in 2002 and 2003, what was the narrative on TV? The Iraq threat. The Iraq threat. What will be done about the Iraq threat? There's a huge question today, the debate on MSNBC, CNN, Fox, ABC News, and PBS NewsHour and everything else. The Iraqi threat. What is to be done? Defend ourselves now or wait around for the inevitable slaughter on our own shores? That is the only question to be decided. When, oh when, will our government make us safer by invading Iraq to make us safer? Safer, 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 they said. Remember that? Safer, your mom and dad repeated after watching a good dose of TV. Safer, safer, we're going to be safer. As though Iraq was a threat. Iraq, which might as well have been Pango Pango or Zimbabwe or some piece of crap land you've never even heard of before. Iraq, are you kidding me? Safer. Well, anyway. So here's Dan Sanchez, our great new writer at antiwar.com, has this excellent article. All of his articles are just great. Flytrap to Breeding Ground, How America's Wars Produced a Terrorist Infestation. And this is good, really good for the brains of those of you especially susceptible to right-wing talking points about how this is all Obama's fault and not Bush's fault. That Bush won until Obama pulled the troops out. But that's not really true, because the truth is this. It is 100% Obama's fault, but it's also 100% George Bush's fault. And the way that works is fault and responsibility is a quality, not a quantity. So they can both be 100% responsible. And the fact is that what George Bush did to Iraq was completely destroy their entire society. That's what he did. And yes, empowered the leaders, the political leadership of the Shiite majority, not necessarily the people of the Shiite majority. To take the capital city and to rule. But in doing so, they completely radicalized an entire generation of Sunnis. And then even though the tribal leaders had marginalized the suicide bomber kooks after the death of Zarqawi in 2006, the people that America succeeded in putting in power there gave them every reason to ally back with these guys. And then at the same time, Barack Obama did the unbelievable, which was, of course, back the jihadist rebellions in Libya and in Syria. And that was what turned Al-Qaeda in Iraq back into a thing. I mean, it already was a thing, but I mean, and really they had been fighting an insurgency against, you know, between 2011 and 2013, 14 in, well, not even 11, 9 and 10, too. Ever since, you know, the whole time, really. The ceasefire was only against the Americans, not necessarily against the new Shiite government. So the Civil War had been going on a lower level, and of course it hadn't involved American troops, so it was under the media radar. But it had been going on in Iraq still. But then when Obama took the side of the Sunni-based insurgency and the jihadists in Syria, well, then blam, that turned... you know, George Bush's swamp you know, into that, that was what dropped all the seeds of the, I don't know. Yeah. I'm bad at the metaphors, but read this great article because it's about how it's all Bush's fault and it's all Obama's fault. There's no reason why you got to feel like you got to take sides between these evil killer pigs, these conspirators against humanity, America's leaders. Isn't it funny how you're supposed to have such reverence for these people? Yeah, that Bill Clinton, he disgraced the office of the presidency. Really? By having sex, and that was the nicest thing he did in there. You know what else he was doing that day? Killing people. From the same desk. Oh yeah, no, the disgrace was having phone sex. Not calling the generals and having them massacre people. All over the world. Anyway. Fly trap to breeding ground, and of course this is all George H.W. Bush and Bill Clinton's fault. Before it's Junior and Obama's fault. Soon it'll be all Jeb's fault. And they'll keep it going. Because war is the health of the state. And their cronies.
Hey, I'll Scott Horton here for Liberty.me, the social network and community-based publishing platform for the liberty-minded. Liberty.me combines the best of social media technology all in one place. And features classes, discussions, guides, events, publishing, podcasts, and so much more. And Jeffrey Tucker and I are starting a new monthly show at Liberty.me. Eye on the Empire. It's just $4 a month if you use promo code Scott when you sign up. And hey, once you do, add me as a friend on there at scotthorton.liberty.me. Be free. Liberty.me. Hey, all Scott here. If you're like me, you need coffee. Lots of it. And you probably prefer it tastes good, too. Well, let me tell you about Darren's Coffee Company at darrenscoffee.com. Darren Marion is a natural entrepreneur who decided to leave his corporate job and strike out on his own, making great coffee. And Darren's Coffee is now delivering right to your door. Darren gets his beans direct from farmers around the world. All specialty, premium grade, with no filler. Hey, the man just wants everyone to have a chance to taste this great coffee. darrenscoffee.com. Use promo code Scott and you get free shipping. darrenscoffee.com.
Yeah, it's me, Scott. It's my show, Scott Horton Show. Thanks for listening. ScottHorton.org. I keep all the interview archives there and all the whole show archives and all the stuff. ScottHorton.org. Yeah. Anyway, so Fly Trap to Breeding Ground. The great article by Dan Sanchez. And, you know, the way I would put it is at the time of the September 11th attacks, Osama and his men were about a couple of hundred guys, 200 or 300 guys. And the CIA and the Air Force killed them basically with laser pointers and daisy cutters. There they are, bomb them. And then gigantic explosion and then bunch of dead Arab Afghan fighters. And it was only a few dozen that escaped from Tora Bora. And I believe that there's good reason to believe, not just speculation, but pretty damn good reason to believe that Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld, Tommy Franks made the deliberate decision to not even try to seal that Pakistan border and to let Osama bin Laden escape. They needed that boogeyman in order to claim that Saddam was friends with him. Oh, I'm truly not that concerned about him, Bush said right after he let him go. And then turned right around and said, oh, but we gotta attack Iraq because Iraq is tied to him. Well, thought you weren't that concerned about him. Nope. Needed to let him go. Man, I could have swore I had that clip here somewhere. Yeah, I do have it right here. Bush don't care, man. See?
You know, again, I don't know where he is. I repeat what I said. I truly am not that concerned about him.
And that's from January or maybe February of 2002. Just a couple of months after the September 11th attack. He got away at Tora Bora in December. It was like a month later. 6 weeks later at the outside. Something like that. They let him go. But it was a band of pirates you couldn't fill a speedboat with. Much less a battleship. And then they turned the Middle East into a boiling cauldron. That's what they did. They invaded Iraq and they created a civil war. They smashed a civilization. And they turned this guy Zarqawi, who was not loyal to Osama bin Laden, even though Colin Powell in his UN speech, pretended that this was the link between Saddam and Osama. He had told Osama, no, I don't want to join you. I want to fight the King of Jordan. And Saddam Hussein, his only connection to Saddam Hussein was he was a wanted man. He was hiding in American protected autonomous Kurdistan in the north of Iraq. Technically, he's in Iraq for the sake of Colin Powell's damned lie that he knew was a damn lie. When what they really meant was, and I don't think the Americans were protecting him there, but the Americans were forbidden from killing him there. The military asked George Bush repeatedly for permission to kill him there before the war, and he repeatedly turned them down. And then when the war started, they used him as the excuse for all the resistance that they got. Because it's not the Iraqi people resisting the occupation. Oh, no. It's the terrorists trying to thwart the will of the Iraqi people to have the Americans help them set up a democracy. And we won't let the terrorists win. And they're all led by Zarqawi. So they built up his legend far more than he ever was. And it wasn't until a year and three quarters into the war. Really. The end of 04. Before Zarqawi said, okay, I'm loyal to Osama bin Laden, and now I call my group Al-Qaeda in the Mesopotamia, whatever the hell. The land of the two rivers. I don't speak Arabic. Anyway. So, yeah. And now, with Obama's, as I was just accusing him, doubling, tripling, quadrupling down on this mess, from the time they killed Osama on, basically, they took on the job of promoting the spread of these kooks and their kookery across North Africa and into the Levant. And then after reaping the whirlwind, no problem. They're still backing them. You notice in, I already mentioned this once, but I'll repeat it, in Lindsey Graham's little statement there. Yeah, we need to send 10,000 guys to Syria to fight ISIS and Assad. No mention of Al-Qaeda in that. No Al-Qaeda. They're to be rebranded and used like the Nazis of Ukraine. Oh, did you think America fought and killed Nazis? No, we support Nazis now. Same thing with the jihadists. Well, again. Well, I guess that was the same thing with the Nazis, too. Again. And anyway, I've been warning for years, and because I'm worried about it, that these guys in the Islamic State and or, you know, the new Al-Qaeda in Syria, at least at some point, are going to find it in their interest to attack the United States to finish the job that Osama started, which is to lure the Americans in and bleed them completely to bankruptcy, force them out, hurt them bad enough that they really don't want to do this anymore. And, you know, as long as America's over there, completely engaged, supporting all different sides of the wars, running full-scale bombing campaigns all the time, it's not like this is non-intervention. They're going to, you know, divert their focus elsewhere. We're completely involved. Our government is making targets out of the American people at the same time that they're helping create the space for these kooks to thrive. Now in the thousands, tens of thousands, Coburn says easy 100,000 fighters working for the Islamic State. Now, that doesn't mean all special forces types who could sneak into America and attack us here, but it means a hell of a lot of guys who can cause a hell of a lot of trouble from now on. And it means that this thing has gone on for so long. And as our guest, Shay Machine Riley, was saying on the show last week or earlier this week about the continued propaganda against American Muslims and alienation of American Muslims, we're going to have, and we have had, more and more Americans, not all duped by the FBI, who are joining up the jihad. And we're so lucky, I can't believe it, and I'm not trying to give anybody bad ideas, but I can't help but say how lucky we are that these guys try to go to Somalia to fight, sometimes succeed in going over there and becoming suicide bombers in some cases, and going over to Syria to fight. And I think our government ought to let them go. Hey, you want to go to Syria to fight? Hey, that sucks. They shouldn't be supporting them over there, our government. But, man, don't frustrate them and keep them here. If they really want to commit treason and join the other side, get them the hell out of America, man. And anyway, the FBI is now claiming, as though they've been keeping count, they admitted before that they hadn't even kept count. Maybe they went back to find out? Because, you know, the bin Ladenites are the good guys in Syria, so why would the FBI be concerned about that, huh? Well, apparently they've gone back to count, and they believe that over 200 Americans have either gone to Syria to join the Islamic State or have attempted to do so. Now, I don't know what percentage of those are just entrapped idiots by the FBI, but I think it's probably the smaller percentage of them. And it's a real problem. It's just a matter of this terror war going on for too long, way too long, starting to blow back. And for their progress in North Africa, how's this one from the Long War Journal, which these guys aren't trustworthy or anything, but Al-Qaeda in North Africa fighting against the Islamic State in Derna, Libya. There's a war I need to do a better job of keeping up on. Who's reporting out of Libya this week, other than this kook, Jocelyn? Hey, I'm Scott Horton here for The Future of Freedom, the monthly journal of the Future Freedom Foundation at fff.org/subscribe. Since 1989, FFF has been pushing an uncompromising moral and economic case for peace, individual liberty, and free markets. Sign up now for The Future Freedom, featuring founder and president Jacob Hornberger, as well as Sheldon Richmond, James Bovard, Anthony Gregory, Wendy McElroy, and many more. It's just $25 a year for the print edition, $15 per year to read it online. That's fff.org/subscribe. And tell them Scott sent you.
Confound it. I got no answer from my guest when I tried to call him. Well, these things happen. Maybe I'll have him in another 10 minutes. That'd be cool. All right.
Well, yeah, either way, I guess I'll save Yemen till next segment. With or without our guest, I'll try to cover some of it for you. I guess the update on the... Did I talk about Iran nuclear talks today at all? Iran nuclear talks update for you here. They've extended the deadline for another couple of days. But I don't know why, man. And then the problem is, by blowing the deadline the other day, there was a technicality in the new law that they passed, a resolution or whatever that they had passed, where now they'll have 60 days to debate it instead of 30 days. And that makes it easier for them to kill the deal, unfortunately. But they've blown that deadline, and so that's going to happen now, if I understand that right. But then the major issues that were left are basically, as we talked about with Reza Marashi on the show the other day, as you can read, I'm really glad that Eric at antiwar.com decided to keep this story up near the top of the page for a second day here. Stupid, evil Obama is bad-mouthing his own damn deal. And saying, oh, no, I think the chances of really getting a deal are less than 50-50. Like, shut up, man. God, I just don't like presidents. I guess most especially whoever the current one is. Anyway, at the same time, though, Gareth Porter, who obviously is, you know, the guy on the facts here, he's also been Eeyore at his own damn birthday party this whole time, too. Very skeptical that this thing is going to happen. And for a lot of good reasons why politics could screw it up. But he's got this report at Middle East Eye. Iranian nuclear deal edges closer as main obstacles are overcome. And so first and foremost there is what's called the PMD, the possible military dimensions. And this is America and the P5 plus one, however many of them, probably just America really. Their insistence, and maybe the French, I don't know, their insistence that Iran answer questions about these previous accusations that they had done research on nuclear weapons. Well, the truth is that the vast majority of all those so-called questions are all based on Israeli forgeries, and everybody knows it. There's no real credible reason to believe that the so-called smoking laptop that was supposedly smuggled out of Iran, the laptop of a dead Iranian scientist that contained all these nuclear documents. There's no reason to believe it's legit at all, and that's according to the IAEA officials themselves. They don't know where these documents really came from in the first place at all. And Gareth Porter has, you know, completely dismantled the arguments within the documents and showed how they were good educated guesses at the time that they were forged. But, you know, to look legit, but that by the time the truth came out, more details came out of Iran about how things were going. It just goes to show that these documents do not coincide. the truth. They're forgeries. And for a lot of other reasons, too. And just type in Gareth Porter, Iran laptop, and you can read all about it. There are probably 10 different stories that he's written developing it in different ways there. And anyway, this has been a real problem that the Americans were demanding, hey, Iran, when are you going to admit that you were beating your wife and when are you going to stop? And they were saying, well, hey, man, we weren't. And what evidence do you have that we were? And we don't even believe in that evidence. Why don't you confront us with the evidence? And the IAEA was, and, you know, the Americans' hand were refusing to even reveal the documents to the Iranians for them to try to dispute. So, you know, what a monkey wrench in the works. Well, they got rid of that. The PMD obstacle was eliminated because Yukiya Amano, who is America's sock puppet on the IAEA, instead of being used to screw things up for once, is being used to do the right thing, basically. And he's announced that, oh, yeah, the PMD, well, we're working with the Iranians, and we're sure that we'll be able to complete our report by December. In other words, all those issues will be resolved. We're going to work it out. It ain't no thing. So don't let it be a sticking point in the negotiations anymore. Okay, good. Well, it never should have been a sticking point in the negotiations in the first place. So they found a way to dispense with that. It's very important. And then, as we were talking about with Reza Marashi the other day, too, lifting the sanctions is difficult. Do you remember that interview with Andrew Coburn from a year or so ago when he wrote that article for Harper's about the sanctions regime after World War I? That they had basically, the bureaucracy had perfected the blockade and the sanctions against Germany, right as the war was ending. And then they just couldn't give up their new perfect bureaucracy. And so they continued to blockade and strangle the Germans long after the war was over. And just to keep the thing going, and how that same thing had replicated itself in Iraq. Was the same thing here too. These are a lot of sanctions enforcing bureaucrats who have to be transferred to somewhere else. Who have to be made somehow to stop doing what they're doing. And it takes a while. And so, and of course the Americans are saying, well, all the things that the Iranians are supposed to do with their nuclear program, they must do all those things immediately. And the Iranians are saying, no, but all the sanctions must be lifted immediately. And then so obviously the solution is, hey, you do your best to get after achieving your goals as fast as you can, and we'll do the same thing. We will both be, as we're lifting sanctions, you'll be scaling back your program like in the deal, and it'll be fine. As long as both sides are actually negotiating in good faith, it'll be fine. And there's really, despite all the hype that you hear, it's all just hype. Just think about how thin it all is. There's no real reason to believe that the Iranians here negotiating just so they can cheat on the damn deal. Doesn't make any sense. John Glazer on Twitter this morning put out this Wall Street Journal editorial that just, you have to assume the malevolence and the malevolent, well, I guess that's fair enough. You'll have to assume the malevolent intentions of the Iranian government on this issue in order to be against this deal, that they mean to break it. But then, like I told y'all before over and over again, because I just can't get over how wonderful it is, that Benjamin Netanyahu, the Prime Minister of Israel, told his National Security Cabinet and apparently authorized them to go and tell the newspapers immediately afterwards that his big worry is that Iran will not be caught cheating because they won't cheat. The big worry is that Iran will stick by the deal, that they'll completely scale back their nuclear program, that they'll allow all these expanded inspections, and that they'll get their sanctions relief, and that after 15 years of this deal, they'll and abiding by it without a problem, then the rest of the countries in the world will start to treat Iran like a normal country in a normal time and leave them alone and integrate them into the community of nations and all of this crap. That their exile will be ended. But then what? That's it. Go read the article in Haaretz. That will be the consequence. He doesn't even say, and then in 15 years, that's when they're going to sneak up on you and make an atom bomb. After they have that much more to lose by doing so. Huh? Doesn't even say that. He says, the worry here is that everything will be fine. Well, here, now I got to find the damn article so I can get the headline right and everything, right? All right. I was leaving this tab open for a while there just because I wanted to refer to it all the time. Netanyahu cabinet Iran deal won't cheat, maybe? Let's see. Yeah. Netanyahu said to fear Iran will stick to deal once signed, the Times of Israel there. And Netanyahu told cabinet, our biggest fear Iran will honor the deal. That's in Haaretz. There you go, footnotes.
Don't you get sick of the Israel lobby trying to get us into more wars in the Middle East? Or always abusing Palestinians with your tax dollars? It once seemed like the lobby would always have full-spectrum dominance on the foreign policy discussion in D.C. But those days are over. The Council for the National Interest is the America lobby, standing up and pushing back against the Israel lobby's undue influence on Capitol Hill. Go show some support at councilforthenationalinterest.org. That's councilforthenationalinterest.org.
All right, Joe, welcome back to the show. Well, god dang, man, I don't know if I got the wrong number or what happened with Matthew Akins. Maybe get him on tomorrow. Phil Weiss is going to be on the show tomorrow. You know, this war in Yemen, this is just war crimes right here. Never mind Barack Obama's entire presidency. You could impeach and remove him and prosecute him and give him life in prison just for this, what he's doing right here to the people of Yemen. What is this madness? What, he hires the Saudis to fly his F-16s for a minute so that makes it not his war? Wrong. It's his war. Just like that time he starved all those Somalis to death. He's doing the same thing in Yemen. Critical food shortages in Yemen as naval blockade keeps ships out. Navy assessment reveals ship traffic halved by blockade. That's the U.S. Navy. The ones doing the blockading. This is Jason Ditz at news.antiwar.com. News.antiwar.com. More than 3 months into the Saudi war against Yemen, the naval blockade against a country that imports some 90% of its food by sea continues apace. And we are just now getting out the first metrics on how much shipping traffic has slowed to Yemen. According to an aid assessment by the U.S. Navy released today by Reuters, some 100 ships went to Yemen in March, the month the war started. In June, only 42 ships managed to reach port, many of them UN-operated ships in the south. We don't have any formal data on the number of ships that normally reach Yemen in peacetime. Pardon me. In peacetime, but the port of Aden alone, admittedly one of Yemen's biggest, averages over 1,000 ships annually. Aid deliveries by plane, more common for medical aid, have also been cut off as the Saudis bombed airports rather than allow the planes to land. Aid groups have been warned in recent weeks that the food shortages are getting worse and worse, and the country is on the brink of full-scale famine. Food prices were already skyrocketing in April and May, and now in many cases food is unavailable at any price. That the U.S. Navy is keeping track of the blockade as part of an aid assessment is particularly surprising, since they have contributed warships at times to participate in the blockade. The U.S. has only boarded a handful of ships during the war, and its contribution to the war effort has mostly been backing airstrikes. Yeah, but that's a big backing, of course. According to the Wall Street Journal, America's picking the targets and organizing. They are air traffic control for the war. It's America's war. Remember our interview with Mark Perry from Foreign Policy and whatever other great places he writes. Terrible places. The generals are hopping mad about this. They can't believe it. Flying as Iran's air force in Iraq, yeah, that sucks, but we're used to that. But flying as Al-Qaeda's air force in Yemen? Damn. Because supposedly Iran backs the Houthis? Come on. Just finished talking about how we're fighting for them in Iraq right now. Can't be that bad of a deal, even if they are backing the Houthis, which all the experts say the Houthis are not an Iranian phenomenon in Yemen. Give me a break. maybe they give them a little bit of money and weapons. But there's nobody who's saying that, nobody who's attempting to prove in any way that Iran is, you know, owns them in any capacity, or even has anywhere near the influence that they have over Hezbollah, for example, or even that kind of level of relationship whatsoever. Whole thing's crazy. And it's all predicated, as Lindsey Graham was saying earlier, on deliberately lying to you with what they call glittering generalities. Radical Islam, that's the enemy. Here we're in a massive sectarian civil war. All the Sunni kings and America and Turkey and Israel lined up against Iran, except for where America backs Iran in Iraq. But otherwise. And we're supposed to fight for and against all sides in this thing. And not even try to differentiate between who's on whose side and what issue and where. The fight is, as Lindsey Graham and as Rand Paul put it, is against radical Islam. What a joke that is. What a lie that is on its face. When any idiot thinking about it for a second, anyone with lukewarm intelligence, Rand, knows that there are people who are as devout in their Muslim beliefs as a human being could possibly be, who would never hurt a fly. That's not it. Maybe they believe it so much they'll even like yell at other people for not believing in it right. Doesn't mean they'll necessarily kill somebody over it. Or join up a political movement based on it. It must be something else. I wonder if Rand Paul knows anyone who has another explanation for what might be going on here. Yeah, anyway. Radical Islam. And now here we are in the midst of all this. They're making a deal with the Iranians. The Leverets are saying, go to Iran. Make the case to the Americans that screw the Saudis. Bush's friends, the Saudis, are the ones who did 9/11 anyway, so let's attack them and let's ally with the Shia in southern Lebanon, in Syria, and in Iran against the Saudis and their jihadist suicide bomber bin Ladenite legions. I don't know if they're going that far, but it is interesting that here they are trying to make a relative peace or ratchet down the tension with Iran. Yeah, relative peace. Ratchet down the tension with Iran. Right in the middle of a time where, again, fighting for them more again in Iraq, but still against them in Syria. Obama came out the other day, said Assad has to go. I mean, that was his huge mistake in the first place, saying that back in 2012, or maybe even 11. But to say that again in 2015, I'm not saying a lie with Assad, but to continue to push for regime change against him? I guess if you want radical Islam to fight, I know how to radicalize people. Support every dictator in the region and or also the Mujahideen revolutions against them. You know, and it'd be easier to say, well, support the sock puppet American dictators, but revolutions, jihadi revolutions against the countries that we don't control. And yet, but we do have a lot of influence in Iraq, still sick the jihadis on them. Had already bought off Muammar Gaddafi back in 2003, brought him in from the cold, still sick the Mujahideen on him. Couldn't help but throw Mubarak overboard. That was his own military that threw Mubarak overboard. America tried to keep him, despite what you might have heard from the right-wing propagandists on that one. And the Muslim Brotherhood, they weren't the jihadists. They're the guys that the jihadists hate for not being jihadists. They're the rich, old, conservative Republicans. At least in Egypt. I don't know about the Syrian Muslim Brotherhood. At least in Egypt, that's who they were. The rich, old, religious, right-wing conservatives. Not the radical suicide bomber revolutionaries set out to remake the world and undo everything and pick a fight with the Americans and a bunch of craziness. those guys come in real useful for stabbing our guy Gaddafi in the back and then for using him against Assad, who's not our guy really, but was useful to the Americans on so many occasions, as we talked about on the show yesterday, torturing jihadis for us. But anyway, so here we are back in the Saudis and, in effect, backing the Islamic State and Al-Qaeda in Iraq. There's a brand new Islamic State franchise. They're claiming it there in Yemen. And we're fighting for them against the Houthis right now. Because supposedly the Houthis are backed by the Iranians that we're making peace with right now. Good enough for you? And the people of Yemen are on the verge of starvation here. And on the verge of being taken over by Al-Qaeda, I guess. I don't know how long that'll take before America puts Al-Qaeda in power in Yemen, in, you know, in the capital city there. Or I don't know if they can. They certainly are not going to get their dictator back, the one that they're trying to reinstall in power there. The one that Hillary Clinton put in power there. But the civilians are laying down and dying. It's like when Obama starved and murdered all the Somalis back in 2010 and 11. Have a nice day.